This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Hi, everybody. Mike the Mailman with this week's Trends to Treasure segment. I think I have some good trends this week. We're looking at the week of October 17th, 18th. First in college ball, we have Oklahoma State at Baylor. Take Oklahoma State. They haven't covered that game 9 out of the last 10 years. 9 out of 10. That's a good trend. Next up in the Southeast Conference, we have Kentucky at Tennessee. Tennessee has covered 20 of the last 27 games, so Tennessee would be a nice pick there. Take the Volunteers. And the final college pick for this weekend will be LSU at Florida. The underdog has covered 15 out of the last 23 times, so I'm not sure who's going to be the underdog here, but whoever it is, take the underdogs. Now, I do have one bonus pick. It's in the NFL. We have Washington at the New York Giants, and this is a long trend. Out of the last 52 games, the Giants have covered 31 times, so take the New York Giants minus the points. And since we're on the Giants, I just want to wish Saquon Barkley a speedy recovery. Come on, Saquon. And this week, Trends to Treasure flew by. But don't forget that with your head and not your heart. As always, I'm Mike the Mailman. Go get him.
There you have it, the latest trends from the Mailman, who of course is not with me tonight, nor are Brandon Noble or Kevin Horn. This is Chris Buchanani. I'll be joined by my good buddy Mike Levine to break down the other half of the 2020 Penn State Nittany Lions roster, the defense, on the other side of the intro. But just to remind you, Mailman's trends say this weekend, take Oklahoma State -7, the Tennessee Volunteers -6, spoiler alert, stay away from that LSU at Florida game. That one's been rescheduled. And according to Mailman's trends, take the New York football Giants -2.5. So we'll be talking Penn State defense today here on the Obligatory PSU podcast. And one reminder, if you're listening just as we posted on Friday, October the 16th, you have until noon to get into the latest round of the Berkey Creamery's Fantasy Flavor League. It's the Sunday Bowl. You got Monkey Business versus Peanut Butter Swirl. Get your votes in at creamery.psu.edu. And if you missed this one, jump in on the fun next week starting at 9 a.m. on Tuesday. So grab your pencil and your paper. This is the Obligatory PSU Podcast.
I've wondered how President Nixon could know so little about Watergate in 1973 and know so much about college football in 1969.
This is the Obligatory PSU Podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. You've listened to all those other Penn State podcasts. Now, listen to another one.
All right, back here on the Obligatory PSU Podcast, Chris Buchanani coming to you once again with my old buddy Mike Levine here to break down the other half of the Nittany Lions roster. Today, Mike, we're going to talk defense and special teams. Nice to have you back.
Good to be back.
So, reminder to all our listeners who are pining away for the sunshine of Mike the Mailman, the insight of Brandon Noble, and the dry acerbic wit of Kevin Horn. They'll all be back next week. And of course, you can always check us out on television. And if you can't get the show in your market, facebook.com/obligatorypsu. So, although I will say that this week's show has Keith Goon Conlon filling in for Brandon Noble, and he has some excellent stories. So, well worth your time as we gear up for Nittany Lions football season. And so, Mike, let's talk about this defense. I think on the last show, you and I think we're in agreement that the offense is probably going to be the strength of this team just based on the number of returning, experienced, impact players all over the ball there and what we think Kirk Ciarrocca is going to be able to do as far as bringing his brain to the raw talent that James Franklin has assembled on that side of the ball. But going into last year, I thought Penn State had the potential to field maybe the best defense in the conference, perhaps among the best in the country. And they were good, not quite as good as I had hoped for. I thought the pass rush was a little underwhelming, and certainly down the stretch, the secondary had some real struggles. So I think there's some room for improvement for Brent Pry and his crew as we head into 2020.
No question about it. And I think that, don't we all kind of get sucked into the sack numbers, which have kind of been in those high 30s to 40s range for the better part of, you know, the time that Sean Spencer was here. Obviously, he left in the offseason for the Giants, but a lot of people use that as the defense mechanism. Still putting up the 3 to 4 a game on average, sometimes more, sometimes less. But you know, I would gladly sacrifice the, what do we have, like 9 or 10 against Idaho last year in the season opener. Shave off 4 of those and spread them out in more key moments. And that's what it's about. I mean, to me, there were just too many empty nights from the guys on the front four where, you know, we really needed them. One more batted pass down against Tanner Morgan, you may win that game. Reverting back to, 2017, as there are still some guys on this team from that team, an interception, a deflected ball, and you're in the playoffs. I mean, it's the one or two plays that are not being made that I think are getting overlooked by these huge sack numbers.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about the total sacks on the season. There's a lot of compiling going on. There are a lot of QB hits against inferior teams or in situations where the game's already starting to get out of hand. And then when you're on an even playing field or, you know, maybe even back on your heels a little bit against an opponent that might have some better athletes than Penn State has, which doesn't happen too often, but there are mismatches certainly when they're playing against the very best in the conference.
Yep.
That's when we're not quite up to snuff on that side of the line of scrimmage. And, you know, look, we've talked about this on Obligatory, and I think most people who cover the program have talked about it for a while, is that the crucial ingredient for Penn State to go to the next level is for there to be market improvement on the offensive and defensive lines. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a real area of focus this year, is can we get a little bit more consistent pressure on the passer, you know, not just in the situations where, you know, maybe it's not going to make or break the game, but in one of those times where you absolutely have to get into the backfield, disrupt a play on third down, and, you know, get your defense off the field. So let's talk about the guys who are going to be primarily responsible for doing that, and those are the pass rushing defensive ends. And Mike, I think, you know, what the projected starters and the guys we think are going to see a lot of snaps are Shaka Toney, who I am really thrilled is getting one last rodeo here. He's one of those guys who maybe could have made the jump to the NFL last year. I thought it was a smart move professionally on his part to come back and play one more year of college ball, but it looked like maybe he hadn't made the right decision. And so I'm really glad he's going to get a chance to go one more time around in the blue and white. And then the guy we've heard so much about opposite him, who has played, you know, in, I don't want to say sparingly, but I don't think we've seen his best football in Jason Owe.
Well, no question about it. And I think for Jason Owe, I mean, isn't he kind of like the defensive version of the Greek Adonis sculpture that was Omar Easy many years ago, where, I mean, the guy is just, I mean, he's physically, you know, pretty much a perfection in the specimen. You always hear that amongst the coaches and all the articles you read. And, you know, Jason Owe is a guy that I think he was, what, player of the game against Michigan State last year, had like 3 or 4 sacks. I mean, that was his breakout. And then was kind of, you know, off and on, you know, the next couple of weeks. But, yeah, as far as having Owe back, who's a redshirt sophomore, and Shaka Toney, who by all accounts is up to about the 250 range now, that can only help.
We should note, that's a big change for him.
It is.
One of the knocks on Shaka, who I think is probably a player, and I think I said this in the roster preview last year, and nothing in my opinion has really changed. He's a guy who I don't think probably gets enough credit. He's always either a guy who people nitpick where he's, you know, maybe not strong or not at his best and overlook a lot of the things that he does well, or he's just getting overshadowed because, you know, last year he played against the guy who was good enough to go in the first round of the NFL draft, ended up dropping to the second in Yetur Gross-Matos, but he's killing it so far for the Carolina Panthers. Very clear why pro scouts loved his build and his potential and the raw material to be molded there. So he's reunited with a former Nittany Lion in Matt Rhule, and they're doing good things together in his rookie year. So I think, you know, one of the knocks on Shaka, though, Mike, was that maybe a little undersized, especially in a rugged conference like the Big Ten. He was playing in the low 230s through most of his career. And now, as you noted, the word is that he's packed on about maybe 10 to 15 pounds of muscle.
And he needed it because playing in the 230s as a defensive end is obviously going to be tough to survive the rigors of the season. But, you know, this season will be, what, 8 games maybe if they can get it in. But, I think overall we need to be, as you said, I think in the last podcast, cautiously optimistic about the offensive line or maybe the wide receivers that it was. That's how I feel about the defensive ends, where for Tony and Owe, if they are kind of the two starters, I feel cautiously optimistic. I don't think athletically they're lacking, but is it the big playability? Well, we'll find out.
And is it the consistency? Is it strength against the run? Is it the ability to play the position, right?
Yeah.
To be a football player versus a guy who's really fast, which is just the one thing that I worry a little bit about with OA. I don't know if I am totally bought in on him yet, frankly. There's been a lot of hype since he stepped on campus about his speed. But you brought it up, man. The up and down play from one week to the next, I think I would almost rather trade the splash games for a little bit more consistency, right? If I could shave a little off the top and bring the floor up, I would be happier to see that. That would be evolution for him, for me, because he's a guy who, look, he's never going to be he's never going to be the stoutest run defender, but he's there to make the quarterback uncomfortable. And again, I would just much rather see consistency out of him. Again, especially because I think Shaka Tony is a guy who's just going to be there every down, every game. And if he can be a grinder on one side and you've got Owe coming off the edge on the other side, just making life miserable for opposing offensive tackles with his speed, then, you know, that's a really nice pair of starting defensive ends.
Yeah, and that was a great way that you put it. Just kind of shave off the top of like those two or three games where Owe stands out, and then you kind of have a mute button for the next month. I mean, that's really not good enough, because even in the games where Chase Young, I don't want to even say it, as I'm putting in air quotes for nobody to see, was neutralized, you know, he was at least darn effective in holding up his end of the leverage battle, forcing running backs inside. Granted, he was 6'5", and I mean, that guy was a freak. But even when you're not getting sacks, which for the most part, defensive ends don't, because if they register 10 or 12 and they're on the field for a couple hundred snaps, they're not getting sacks most of the time. It's a very small amount of the time they're even hitting the quarterback. But you need to be in the backfield. You know, make that quarterback throw off the back foot. Rush his throw a half second longer, Chris, and that's the difference with you maybe going 10-2 or 11-1 or 12-0. It's those little plays that are not made.
Yeah, and we're going to talk later in the show about the secondary, and that's a big part of it too. I think, you know, your pass rush and your secondary really should have a complementary relationship where the best defenses, they're both going to help each other. The pass rush is going to make the quarterback uncomfortable, and the quarterback is going to have difficulty getting the ball out in the face of the speed rush because there's good coverage downfield. So we'll talk about the corners a little bit. But yeah, those two guys starting, you feel good about that. I mean, the one thing I will say about Owe is, you know, his speed is evident just to the naked eye when you're there watching the games in person, which, of course, none of us are going to get to do this year.
Right.
Almost.
Well, you can buy a cardboard cutout and then you'll watch.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. My cardboard cutout can see how fast he is. But, you know, it's funny, Mike, you pulled out the Omar Easy reference, which was incredible. The guy who I think of when I think of Owe, they're built a little bit different, a little differently. But I think of Jack Crawford.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
because he is a guy, he's just for reference, Jack was a defensive end here. About the same size, but it definitely like a larger frame. And he played at Penn State. Let's see. I'm trying to get the exact years he played here. He was here in like the mid-2000s and ended up – yeah, I think 2011 was his senior year. And he was drafted by the Oakland Raiders and has had a really nice long NFL career. He's still playing with the Titans today. He was on the Cowboys. He was on the Falcons. He was a guy every year heading into the preseason at Penn State. You heard all this hype about how he was really ready to break out and, you know, become one of the best defensive ends in the Big Ten. And it's not like he was ever bad, right? He was always solid, always consistent. But if you would have told me in 2010 or 2011 a decade from now, you're still going to be talking about Jack Crawford as a defensive end in the NFL who plays a lot of significant snaps. I don't know that I would have bought it.
Yeah. And one thing that Jack was, which you just said that you wanted Jason and these other guys to be, was steady. I mean, he was just steady, always a grinder. He got in the backfield at times, but he was just that steady guy you pencil in the lineup, so to speak, and not worry about.
Well, hopefully we can get a little bit more than that out of these starters, but I do want to just talk a little bit also about the depth behind them. I think, well, I'm curious about your opinion. If I were to ask you who you think the third defensive end in the rotation with those two guys we named as starters, who's your third guy?
Oof. I mean, it's so hard to tell, isn't it? Because you either have a couple of natural freshmen in there or a couple of redshirts battling and then a couple guys off injury. I mean, the defensive end depth from the standpoint of experience is pretty much nil. If we're talking about recruiting rankings, that's a different story. You can go up and down this roster, and James Franklin is pretty much, you know, hit a three or four star at every position and some fives. But if I had to go behind Tony and Owe, I mean, one would think Nick Tarburton is going to be in that. Shane Simmons will be in there. And I mean, man, I mean, if we go deeper than that, maybe a Smith Vilbert, but I mean, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, to me, I was studying this beforehand. I'm like, hey, it's take your pick.
See, I actually think it might be Adisa Isaac because you've heard his name so often. I wouldn't.
And he is a sophomore.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. And he's fast, too. Again, you know, this is really what we have been working towards at Penn State, is just being able to rotate guys who can come in and beat opposing O-linemen with their speed. And that was the selling point on Isaac coming in. You've heard his name a lot. I would not be surprised if he has just muscled his way in front of Shane Simmons to be the number three guy. Now, Simmons is a really interesting case. I like him a lot as a football player. Again, he has not really flashed. He has certainly not, you know, he I think it's fair to say, Mike, he has not lived up to his star ranking or his billing as a recruit. Is that fair?
That's very fair. Yeah.
Now, a lot of that has been injury related, a lot of that, but you know, again, another guy you're thrilled to see have one more chance. And I think maybe because the expectations were so high because of the type of recruit he was, maybe not appreciated for a lot of the things that he does well. I thought going into last season, he had finished 2018 pretty strong. Yeah. And I was excited about where he was going to go with another offseason of development. And he just didn't put it together the way I had hoped. But we know from what he was hyped at as from his high school career, like that potential is there. And we've seen him play well. And again, you want to talk about, you know, ceiling and floor. The thing I like about having Shane Simmons is whatever, the third or the fourth defensive end, a guy who I think is certainly going to play a lot of snaps. The floor is pretty high. I think the floor is a very solid, dependable, do-everything upperclassman Big Ten defensive lineman. And the ceiling, of course, is he realizes what everybody had expected him to be or something close to it. So it's you know, like you said, maybe not a ton of experience and depth behind those guys, but I feel pretty good that as long as they can keep the D linemen healthy, we've got a nice rotation there at defensive end.
Yeah, it's a nice rotation, and it will allow some of these guys to get their feet wet real early. I mean, you know, you're looking at, what, four true freshmen in that group, a couple of red shirts, and then some sophomores. I mean, Shane Simmons is the elder statesman of the group. I mean, Shaka Tony is also a redshirt senior, but Shane has been on campus, I believe, longer. So this is, you know, by eligibility, a very young group that, you know, if one or two guys can emerge behind the starters, then you're sitting pretty.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is going to be whether or not some of these defensive tackles, which we're going to talk about right now, maybe depending on how, and we, you know, it'll be interesting to see what we do with the defensive line rotations and whether that changes based on what John Shaw wants to do in conjunction with Brent Pry versus what Sean Spencer did. But I do think some of these interior tackles, you might see them pop out inside. You might see some of the defensive ends move into that pass rushing spot inside on third downs. But your two starting defensive tackles, I think pretty clearly, are going to be the redshirt senior Antonio Shelton and then the junior PJ Mustipher. You buying that, right?
Yeah. I mean, Antonio, obviously a redshirt senior, and you know, I think that, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the defensive line. I mean, there's a ton of guys there that have vied for some playing time, and you know, we know Mustipher has played some football for sure,
and he looks really solid. Again,
he does.
I think this is one of the positions where Penn State has really failed to bring in an elite level difference maker to get where we're trying to go, which is one of those teams that can consistently compete to go into the playoffs and make a playoff trip at least once every 2, 3, 4 years. Defensive tackle is one of those spots where we just haven't gotten one of those guys. And Brandon talks about it all the time. There's only 3 or 4 of them in every recruiting class, and they're all going to the same places, and Happy Valley ain't it, at least not yet. Mustipher's a great player. He's not on that level. Shelton, and go ahead.
No, and I was just about to give you the attribute for that, because I was going to use it on the podcast, and you stole my thunder, even though it was your original thought many years ago. And you and I have talked about this for a long time, and I remember you saying it, that, you know, when Clemson got Christian Wilkins, and I know Penn State was after him, and they also had Dexter Lawrence, who was a first-round defensive lineman. I mean, Clemson, since 2016, let's start with, like, Penn State's evolution, so to speak, these last 4 years – they've had a handful of front four guys go in the first couple of rounds of the draft. And I was in total agreement with you when you said that if we had a Christian Wilkins on our team, or at least the equivalent, like Obama has had in the middle, or a Lewis Nix from Notre Dame. You remember when he was on their playoff team up front?
Sure.
And he caused major havoc. If we had one of those five-star road graders who didn't need pressure from the ends to get his own pressure, who could just simply take over a drive in the fourth quarter or blow up the center and the guard, Penn State would have at least one playoff appearance, if not more. And I remember you saying that a couple of years ago, and I'm in total agreement. It's the one area that James cannot get that five-star total difference maker. And that's why we have this kind of rotation by committee, and why I was so kind of hesitant to try and come up with some answers for you, because, you know, Devon Ellis, Judge Culpepper, Shelton Hansard, Aeneas Hawkins is back. I mean, I don't want to go with the phrase, well, they're just guys, but for now, that's kind of what they are until somebody really emerges.
This is an inside joke for you and me, and maybe the audience will appreciate it, but that just made me think of the quote back to our Lion 90.7 broadcasting days when Pat Griffin said, Penn State is a running team. And if they can't run, what are they? They're just a team.
That's right. And, yeah, that dates back 20 years now, sure.
And that, look, man, that's kind of these defensive tackles. Maybe. Look, I am not going to be someone who you're going to find singing the praises too often of Antonio Shelton. It's not to be down on the kid, but I don't know. Again, we're judging with some pretty harsh standards here. And I go back to what James said after the 2018 Ohio State game. I hate to almost keep harping on it, but I think it makes the point so clearly that you will be held to the standards you set for yourself. And he was the one who came out and said,
absolutely.
Yeah, we're not satisfied to just be a team that's going to win 10 games and go to a good bowl game. Right? When he talks about being elite, there's only 5 or 6 programs in the country that get to claim that status. And this is one of the spots where these guys, they need to play at a high level. They are never going to be one of those difference-making players. But if the defense as a unit can play up to a certain par and the offense can be very explosive, then yeah, this is a team that can contend for a playoff spot this year. But typically, we've seen the playoff teams have difference makers at the inside. Now, to go beyond the starters, Mike, an interesting guy, I think, to keep an eye on. And one thing to note, Mustipher, Shelton, they're both 300-pounders. Guy I'm going to talk about now, Fred Hansard, 324. Another guy who I really think we've been waiting for to see him break out. And he's played really well, but he hasn't been great, right? Just a lot of really good football players, and we're not looking for really good. We're looking to great to top-tier elite in the country.
Aren't straight, yep.
And so just to throw out a couple other names that I'll be interested in watching, Judge Culpepper, whose dad, Brad, played in the NFL for many years for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's one of these guys, like I mentioned. Also, Hakeem Beamon has gotten a lot of hype from the players on Media Day. You heard one guy after another reference Beamon as a player who they think is going to get a lot of run this year and has been flashing in camp. They're both in the smaller size. So we have Hansard, we have Shelton, and Culpepper, big 300-plus pounders. And then you've got, like, Beamon, who's rostered at 274. I imagine he's probably a little bit heavier than that now. But Culpepper at 281. And Aeneas Hawkins, who you mentioned, a 6'2", 285 guy. So we've got the big space-eater types, and then we've got a little bit leaner, maybe the Kevin Givens-type player who can go inside-outside.
Yeah, and I think a couple of the leaner ones who are more angular would be a lot like what Robert Windsor was. For the last few years, you know, he can probably move a little bit better, quicker than a guy like Hansard or Shelton. And you hope that those leaner guys, you know, your Culpeppers of the world and Hakeem Beamons, you hope that they have the motor that Robert Windsor had, because again, he falls into or fell into, now that he's, you know, no longer on the team and he got drafted. He fell into that, not a great ceiling, but just a super hard worker, like a throwback Penn State interior lineman. But
sure,
I think one guy who I know a lot of people are excited about is the redshirt freshman Joseph Darkwa.
Yeah, count me among them for sure.
Yeah, 6'5", 292 from Germany. I mean, boy, Darkwa has been getting some praise. He's a big guy, but most physically imposing lineman on the team. He's the only one that stands above 6'4". He's already 292. So if Darkwa can get in on the action and really tick up, as you would say, I mean, that'd be fantastic.
So, okay. So redshirt freshman, number 44. I love this kid. I am not counting on him to contribute jack in 2020. So if he is playing so well that as a freshman with all these other guys who have played a lot of football, many of them, if he can force his way into that rotation, that is good, good news for Penn State. Now, again, unless it's because of injury, but if he just with his play on the field is compelling the coaches to already get him into the mix, even though he's one of these guys who has not been playing football for that long, that's good, good news. Because really, the one thing I do see as a positive here as we button up the defensive line is that, you know, we've mentioned one guy after another, and we haven't had anything really bad to say about any of them. Right. It's not that any of these guys is a liability. You're just not sure that any one of them individually, with the possible exception of Owe, you say that guy is going to bust out and be a star. But there are certainly a few who could. And even if all you get is an aggregate of four guys in various combinations playing together well, and that's one of the other things I want to note, is this is another position where we're bringing in a new coach. And one of the situations where there's a new coach there, not because the old guy maybe wasn't getting it done, but just because he got what at least at the time, I guess, looked like a pretty enticing opportunity. I don't know if coaching for the New York Giants makes you feel great about your job security right about now. But, you know, the one thing I'll say about John Scott is that South Carolina maybe hasn't had the greatest results by SEC standards. But like most of the schools down there, they turned out some really good linemen, like Javon Kinlaw, who he coached up and was a first-round pick in the NFL draft this year. He's killing it in San Francisco right now. Like, he looked great. He was one of the only players in the 49ers who showed up to play in that Eagles game a couple of weeks ago. So if he can get, you know, through coaching, technique, whatever, if he can get a lot out of numerous of these defensive linemen, then I feel pretty good, actually, about where we are with the unit. Maybe we don't have one game breaker, but as an aggregate, they can be impactful.
And I think that's the point of the night so far, Chris, that you made, because it goes back to when we previewed the offensive roster the other day, that, you know, we talked about as a team, there may not be a ton of playoff worthy units on this team. There are a couple, but for those that maybe are a notch or two below that, if the rest of the team can pick up or elevate those groups that maybe are a little bit deficient, then that's all you need. I mean, LSU last year, they didn't have every unit that was A+. I mean, they struggled at times to stop the run and different areas that would get away from them. But Joe Burrow and that offense were so good that it overcame a lot of those things. And you know, we saw Clemson last year. Their secondary got sliced by Joe Burrow. That doesn't mean that they weren't a playoff team. So, yeah, as an aggregate, if the defensive line is okay to solid, but the linebackers in the secondary especially can improve their play a few notches, that's fine.
So let's bump to a break, and on the other side, we'll get into all of those positions, starting with my favorite, linebacker U, baby. Chris Bucanani with Mike Levine. It's the Obligatory PSU Podcast. We'll be right back with you. All right, linebacker U. This is what I'm talking about. Now this, Mike, absolutely should have been a playoff-worthy unit. No Micah Parsons. There is no replacing Micah Parsons and what he was going to bring to Penn State this year. But after years of bemoaning our recruiting at the position, things have ticked up in the last few years, and I feel really good about the starters and the depth Penn State has at linebacker.
And I'll replace a Gary Bertier.
No, you cannot. No, you can't.
For all of our Remember the Titans fans. Look, this linebacking core, even sans Parson, I think is good enough to be playoff worthy. It just goes back to what we closed.
By the way, that's crazy. Season. By the way, we lost one of the best defensive players in the country out of the linebacking core, and they're probably no worse than the second or third best group of linebackers in the conference.
Totally. Yeah, and I think it's a good enough unit to be in the playoffs, no doubt. I mean, it's just, you know, the athleticism out of the group. I mean, it's safe to say that it'll be Brandon Smith, Ellis Brooks, and Jesse Lucchetta, and then maybe Lance Dixon is kind of like your 1B kind of option after that.
I think exactly. I think those are the guys. I think you nailed it. Yep.
Yeah, so Lucchetta at 6'3", 241, and Brandon Smith, 6'3", 237. I mean, you know, either one of those guys could play in the middle. I mean, I'm sure they may rotate at times, in that area. But and Ellis Brooks and Lance Dixon have the great athleticism. Curtis Jacobs, I think, will get in the mix as a freshman. But this is really, you know, you got to remember, people, I know they get all excited about Brandon Smith, who was a 4- or 5-star kid. Lance Dixon was a really highly touted linebacker, player of the year out of Michigan. A lot of people had him as a 4-star backer. He was one of the best in the country out of West Bloomfield. So this group, they are primed to be ready and to make big plays.
Yeah, I mean, I love this group. I really do. I mean, it makes me sad to think what could have been one more year in the blue and white for Micah. But I understand why he did what he did, and that's water under the bridge. So I want to talk about the guys who are here who are going to be on the field for Penn State this year. You know, Brandon Smith is going to be a star. He is going to be the next great Penn State linebacker. You know, if you go back to the mid-2000s up until, you know, the kind of the Mouty Gerald Hodges era, you can just name one great linebacker after another. You know, Puzlusny, Connor, Lee, Stupar, Mouty, Hodges, Hull. A ton of great linebackers. I think we got a run like that coming at Penn State, and Brandon Smith is going to be one of those guys. But I love the other two. I love what Ellis Brooks brings. One of the things I like about Ellis Brooks is that even last year, when there was a lot more experience in the linebacking core, and the coaching staff, I think justifiably, really liked having Jan Johnson out there.
Yep.
Ellis Brooks was just too good to not get on the field. He played a lot of snaps, and you could tell he forced his way into that rotation because he was just too talented. He made big plays for Penn State. I really like what Ellis Brooks brings. And Jesse Lucchetta is one of my favorite players on the team. He's wearing number 40, and he reminds me a lot of Jason Kabinda. He reminds me a lot of Josh Hull. Just those guys who are like your textbook, go up and hit a load, smash you in the mouth, but still be really smart and really disciplined with the way they play the position. Those three guys together, I think that is a hell of a combination. You've got the grit and the classic linebacker you persona, like get the guy in neck roll in Luketta. You've got the freak athlete in Brandon Smith. You've got the do-everything guy with a lot of experience, the upperclassman leader in Ellis Brooks. And then, like you said, you got Lance Dixon, who is another highly touted guy who can come in, be your fourth linebacker. Charlie Catcher, who's kind of coming off some injuries. And Tyler Elsden, who's also a freshman we've heard some talk about. And then, you know, yeah, we'll see. Brandon Smith, Curtis Jacobs. As a freshman, I wanted to talk about Curtis Jacobs. He's kind of maybe the next Brandon Smith, the next guy we think could be the big star from the linebacking spot. So I feel really good about the two deep at all three linebacking positions.
Yeah, and Luketta, I mean, your description was dead on. He gives off that lunch pail vibe he should be wearing that three size neck roll too big. Yeah, no question. And Ellis Brooks last year, I mean, you mentioned he didn't play every down, but when he did. He was effective. He had 39 tackles, 4 TFLs, and 2.5 sacks in his limited action. I mean, Ellis Brooks was just a playmaker. So, yeah, I don't think that this position is going to get much criticism at all, at least out of us these kind of prognostications. I mean, they are ready to go. They're young. They're youthful. And, you know, what a nice blend of size. And I think that that's important as we kind of wrap them up with Luketta in the 240s. Brandon Smith's almost about 240. Ellis Brooks is at 240. And then you start ticking down into the 230s, 20s, and 10s to get more of your athletes on the field. So you have a variety of size, almost like a grab bag with those snack packs we used to have as kids. You know, there's all different kinds of flavors. And now this linebacking core is going to be fun to watch.
I love that, man. That is a great analogy. The snack pack of linebacking.
Do you remember those? It would have Doritos and Cheetos and Fritos. Oh, it was great.
Come on, of course. Yeah. I always like to get the Fritos with the dusting of the chili powder on them.
Oh, yes.
Legendary. Amazing. By the way, apparently I think I misnamed our defensive line coach, John Scott, before. I don't know what I said, but I have the habit of doing that every once in a while. You'll appreciate that. We did this one show last year. We were previewing the roster, and I called Rasheed Walker Kareem McKenzie. So, you know, this is when you've got 35 years worth of Penn State rosters in your head, these things happen.
Kareem McKenzie had a nice career. So
he sure did. He sure did. It was Jack Crawford-esque. Okay, so now moving back into the secondary, Mike. Again, let me just say how excited I am to see linebacker you be back. Like, I can't wait to watch these linebackers, man. The front seven, I think, as a collective, is going to be a strength for Penn State. So let's talk about the secondary because it was not so good down the stretch last year.
No, it wasn't. And it is how like your tone gets lower. Like it was kind of like we were breaking down the offensive line the other day. It's like, and now time for the secondary.
Well, I mean, look, there's just no defending it, right?
No,
like
I still remember
when we did our preview last year, I was high on the corners, you not so much. And I mean, I got to give it up to you. Like those guys, look, as a group, the defensive backfield just did not get it done. They didn't play well enough. They let up way too many big plays. They made way too many dumb mistakes. And it was the Achilles heel of the football team last year, in my opinion.
Yeah, and just to kind of put it on a more macro view before we dive in here. I mean, dating back to 2016, because this is kind of when I start all of our real accurate analysis, kind of like when James Franklin at least has almost been playing with a full deck on.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember there were years that would go by when you and I were in school and then shortly after where we couldn't put a defensive back in the NFL. Like we were not DBU, nor are we now. I mean, it's been a position that we've kind of been devoid of sending really, you know, guys that make quality impacts in the league. That 2016 to 2017 squad, Grant Haley, NFL, Troy Apke, NFL, he's a starter. Amani Oruwariye started the other day. He got a pick. Marcus Allen is in the NFL. So you have four guys from that two-year span that when the rubber met the road in the big games, you know, Pitt and USC in 2016, but really when everybody was older, as you know, the year of regret for me that this team should have made the playoffs in 17. I mean, those two games against Michigan State and Ohio State pretty much sum up what you talked about having last year and the year before. You're in position to make plays, or even worse, you're not in position to make great plays. Yet, you know, these guys are super talented. So to me, that's a coaching and development problem because, I mean, there are four guys right now in the NFL I don't know if we had a span like that in a decade, you know, during some of the times when we were in school. So out of the defensive back position. But, look, Tariq Castro Fields is the elder statesman of the group. He's obviously had a rough couple of years after a really nice freshman campaign.
Yeah.
Lamont Wade's getting a lot of praise as possibly a nickel corner. I was reading that today that he could be, when there's no need for kind of like his safety hybrid on the field, he could be a nickel corner as well. So those two are your upperclassmen. But really, I'm more excited about the younger guys behind him. I mean, Joey Porter Jr., Marquise Wilson, and Keaton Ellis, they're the future to me. Yep. Those three guys, their athleticism is off the charts. They're highly praised. And I think that everybody who kind of follows the team will realize that their ladder is very high.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you say that, you're talking about the, sort of their frame and their ability, what the area they can cover physically.
No question.
Yeah, just
no
in question. Terms of wingspan. One more rodeo for Tariq Castro Fields. I really like that kid. I have got a soft spot for him, and I'm rooting hard for him. Clearly, he has shown that he can do it. He's got to be a little bit more consistent mentally, I think. You referenced his freshman season. We know he's got it in him, and I am just really rooting hard for him to put together a really solid senior go of it.
So last year, the pass defense was 61st nationally. And I found some interesting stats today.
Sure.
That last season against 451 opponent passes in 13 games, the Nittany Lions pulled in 10 picks. So that ranked 88th. And that was a drop from the year before. I mean, it's
yikes.
That has to get, I mean, it has to get better. I mean, there's just no question about that.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, you've got three of the players who tied for the team lead with two picks apiece coming back in Castro Fields, Jaquan Brisker, safety, and Marquise Wilson, who's another corner I want to talk about in just a moment, but I first want to mention the other two guys you talked about. Joey Porter Jr., that guy clearly has the gene pool working in his favor, and you and I both like big corners.
I always have. And that it's irked me to no end when you put a smaller guy on the field. That's always bothered me, dated back to David Macklin, who I loved, but it was just too small.
Sure, and they're becoming more in vogue in the NFL, so I think teams are more willing to look at and recruit big corners. Youth league and high school coaches are putting guys with those frames at corner more. And Joey Porter, 6'2", 198. So that is a long physical specimen who looked really good when he got in spot duty in his four games to avoid burning the red shirt last year.
Yeah.
And then Keaton Ellis, also another kid who just forced his way onto the field. And I know a little bit more about Keaton because he's a state college kid. So I got to see him play here. And it was very clear that this was not just an offer to the hometown kid. This was a legitimate FBS Power 5 talent. And he is a super athletic young man, and I thought showed a great nose for the ball last year. Both of those guys are going to push really hard for a lot of playing time between them to play opposite Castro Fields. And look, if Tariq doesn't get it done, the best player will play, right? I wouldn't be surprised. Well, let me put it this way. I wouldn't be shocked if we see a lot of Porter and Ellis out there and maybe not as much Castro Fields if he struggles like he did at times last year. And then Marquise Wilson was probably the biggest playmaker on the football team through the last few games of 2019.
He had a great cotton ball. His second half of 2019, as you said, was fantastic. So with Marquise and Keaton being 5'11", but super athletic, Keaton is unbelievably fast. And then you go Porter at 6'2". I mean, those three are going to see the field just for the sheer fact that everybody runs 4 and 5 wide these days, unless you're playing Michigan. So,
yep.
I mean, Michigan still goes double tight end jumbo. Everybody else, I mean, you need at least 3 or 4 DBs on the field virtually at all times. So if you're telling me that, you're putting Castro Fields, Wilson, Porter Jr., and Keaton Ellis on the field, okay. You're not going to get to break grammar rules here, out-athleticized with that group. Now, Are the instincts going to be there and the big playability when you need it? I mean, we'll see. It hasn't been there the last 4 years, but I like this group a lot. I mean, they're just those three young guys that we talked about last year that played as freshmen. They just had a swagger to them. It looked like they belonged on the field, and not yes, just they were yes. getting, not that they were just getting their feet wet. Does that make sense?
Like, no, absolutely. I was just about to say that. Look, sometimes freshmen in college football don't know what they don't know and can have a little fool me once effect going on. Like Tariq Castro Fields has never played as well for Penn State as he did as a true freshman. But when you watched all three of those guys, those young guys, Keaton's a sophomore, Joey, a red shirt freshman, and Marquise Wilson, a sophomore, they all absolutely belonged. Like you said, are they going to have the instincts? I thought, in many cases, the younger kids last year looked a little bit more natural, a little more comfortably instinctive than some of their upperclassmen counterparts.
Well, your point is a good one where, you know.
And that's on the field with John Reed, who's, playing a lot of football for the Houston Texans right now.
Sure, and there are a lot of young players, as you said, the lights are too bright, and that others, just they don't get phased. It's just football for them. And I think it was – Josh Beckett in a 2003 World Series for the Marlins, who said in the postseason that the Marlins just might be stupid enough to win it all. And I kind of equate that to what we're talking about, where, I mean, these guys, they played last year like they didn't know any better. It didn't matter to them. Okay, I'm a freshman. So what? I'm going to make plays. Marquise Wilson, as you said, was arguably the best defensive back on the field for Penn State. He was a freshman. So, I think the future is bright for those guys. And obviously Fields, needs to lead the way as the veteran in that corner room.
And I'm ready to see the cornerback position change games in a positive way for Penn State.
I think you and I are both
on the same page. We're on the same page. I think we've got the guys who can do it. And again, when you've got a solid front four speed rush off your defensive end spots and you can lock down the field, then you've got something going on. So let's wrap it up by talking about the safeties, because we've got two guys who have played a lot and looked, I thought, both pretty good last year in Jaquan Brisker, who was a JUCO kid coming in for his first year of Big Ten football and still played a lot for Penn State. Like I said, tied for the team lead in interceptions with two picks. And Lamont Wade, who, as you alluded to, might move back and forth a little bit, but seems to have settled in at one of the other two safety spots, and we know is an absolute fan favorite of our own Kevin Horn.
Well, Jaquan Brisker, I think this year we'll see his impact be even more sudden, more immediate. I think he struggled with the first half of last year. Obviously, it was
playing. I think almost all of those JUCO kids do, right?
Yeah.
It is just impossible, no matter what kind of raw material you come in with, to go from playing at that level to getting thrown into a Big Ten game and not be a little overwhelmed. I have not seen too many of the JUCO transfers, many of whom eventually work out, look great out of the gate, no matter what the hype is around them.
So I think the issue that we had at safety last year, maybe even the year before, which obviously preceded Jaquan Brisker, are the safeties that are good with the ball in the air. And now that sounds pretty bad, but I'm saying like Lamont Wade is more of a box safety, more like a Marcus Allen. He'll come up and stick. You're great against the run. We saw that last year.
Roger James Boyd, doesn't he, Levine?
Yeah, he does. Not great coverage if it's one-on-one or he's the last line of defense on a deep ball, but he'll come up and be that kind of box safety where he'll knock your head off, or in Justin Fields' case, he'll jar the ball loose. But then we saw Garrett Taylor last year take really poor angles as the free safety, specifically in that Minnesota game.
Yeah, please don't remind me.
Well, but I think that's where Jaquan Brisker, and then obviously Trent Gordon, who's going to be a safety as well, and Jonathan Sutherland, those three, they need to play that open space better. There's no question that if a corner gets burned or a tackle gets missed, they have to be there, not be spun around like a derrido, just trying to figure out where the football is, whether it be in the air or in the receiver's hands. It's almost like the instincts haven't been there the last couple of years. The awareness You hear a lot about busy eyes, you know, where there's just too much going on in front of them or not being able to kind of track their manner of the ball. Let's hope that that's gotten better because I think it is a pretty talented group.
Yeah, I think the amount of snaps they've played has got to work in their favor in terms of all of that slowing down for them. I feel very comfortable with those two guys, Brisker and Wade. I think, again, they just have played a lot. You've heard rave reviews of the development that Brisker has shown, which everyone predicted when he came in. They said, you know, maybe he's going to take a little time to get acclimated, but once he figures it out, this guy is going to be a star. I really like the way Lamont Wade was playing through much of 2019, and I think he's poised to build on that. I think he's going to have a really good senior season. I don't follow him on Twitter, okay? So I have no idea what he's talking about or thinking about, but that dude, whatever it is, like, he seems super intense. And you saw in the Ohio State game what happens when he channels that onto a football field. So, hey, look, my man, you know, whatever you got to do, all right? Bruce Banner is a Penn State alumnus, so, you know, just make like the Hulk and do what you got to do to get hyped up for the game. And I like Jonathan Sutherland too, although, like you said, another guy who I like better probably playing in the box than in coverage.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, who's going to be the coverage safety? I mean, I would venture to guess that
a Brisker, I think. And I think you're right. You're going to say Trent Gordon. Yeah, I think he'll play a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trent Gordon just athletically is maybe a little bit quicker, a little bit twitchier, to use one of those dumb draft terms, but it is true. And I think the other guy's a little bit more rugged. So we'll see. I mean, look, it's a pass defense that ranked 100th out of 130 last year. I mean, my God, if they can improve that to 70, which is still awful for a program the caliber of Penn State, that could be all the difference between, you know, going to whatever bowls are even going to be in existence in 2021 or the playoffs. So, I mean, again, like when you're at 100, man, you can pretty much only go up from there. And I'm tired of seeing quarterbacks like Kenny Pickett from Pitt have their career nights against Penn State, which he did last year, 372 yards. That was the most yards he threw for an entire season last year, most completions. And, you know, frankly, guys like that should not be putting their resume reels together. Same thing with Drew Patterson. Okay, we had no clue what was going on last year on defense. So for my money, all the units have to get better. But if that secondary can, as you say, tick up just 20 spots, maybe that's good enough.
So for me, the number one thing I'm looking at is, can we get some I was going to say addition by subtraction, but that's not really the right way to put it. Can we, through infusing youth into the cornerback position, get a major upgrade in output from where we have been just through these guys we just talked about, you know, Porter, Wilson, and Ellis, getting those guys in there and mixing them in with Tariq Castro-Fields. So upgrade in performance at the corner position is number one for me. Number two is no stinkers on the defensive line. Let's go two deep at all four spots with guys who can come in and be legitimate starting caliber Big Ten players. And then you just need one of those guys to be the breakout player. And look, if it's Jason Oweb, because everybody's been waiting for it, all the better. So high output at corner, solid across the defensive line with one breakout star, and then just get, if you just get plateau level performance out of your senior starters at safety, Wade and Brisker, I think this is a much improved defense from last season.
You know, when you go through the roster and you try and count the amount of true seniors that are on this team, it's hard to fill up one hand. I mean, it's a very young defense.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes that's not a bad thing.
No, and I was going to just capitalize on your point. I think sometimes the infusion of youth, man, it's what you need, because I think that maybe you get a little bit too comfortable. Like, we knew Castro-Fields was going to start last year. John Reed was a fifth-year guy coming off the year two of recovering from the knee injury. But maybe those young guys should have played more. Maybe they should have, you know, taken a full quarter from Reed at times, who would labor, or Castro-Fields. You know, those guys are hungry, chomping at the bit, and they have better size. So, In a fusion of youth, this day and age, Chris, guys aren't staying 4 and 5 years who are supremely talented. If you get a couple out of them after a redshirt year, that's all you have them for. So you might as well capitalize on them while you can.
You know, I go through the roster exercise with you here, where I go down the offense and the defense, and I look at what we've got, and I think about how I feel about the team, and I think, I don't know, why am I not more excited about this team than I am? And I don't know if it's just because it's weird coronavirus year and just everything is so out of whack. I'm lacking in perspective, but I don't know. I'm feeling a little bit better after having these two conversations with you, Mike. Well, and maybe we've done that for the audience as well.
Well, let's hope so that we've lifted the spirits. I mean, I think that, you know, we'd be lucky to get through 8 games just with the coronavirus, but that notwithstanding, like if you take out the external stuff that could, you know, throw a wrench into any of this, I like this roster, man. I just think that
it's hard not to when you take a good long look at it.
I think that, you know, for as much as I was always a believer that having the older players was a benefit, I think even last year I was getting a little tired of, you know, all right, we knew Shelton and Windsor and Matos were always going to, you know, be in the same spots and, you know, the same players, the same positions for the last 3-4 years with Fields and Reed. I mean, you know, meanwhile, I'm watching games and I mean, they're playing their young freshmen, the 5-star kids who just walked on campus and found the bookstore. Like that's what I want to see out of this roster. And now it's going to happen naturally because there's like 5 seniors on the defense.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I mean, there's really, I mean, you know, the youth infusion is going to have to be out there. And not only does that bode well for the future, but I think with this year, if the dice rolls in Penn State's favor and you get an uptick out of some positions, it could be a pretty nice ending.
So 2 thumbs up, 1 for experienced playmakers coming back all over the ball on offense and the other for the youth movement on defense with a sprinkling of senior leadership. So could make for actually pretty nice season here in Happy Valley, COVID-19 notwithstanding. So Mike Levine, it is always a pleasure, my friend. You are welcome back here anytime. This has been wonderful. I've enjoyed the conversation. I've enjoyed not having to spend 25 minutes going back and bleeping out all the swear words for 2 straight episodes. This has been wonderful. And we've enjoyed sharing the time with you, our listening audience. We love you. Thank you so much for sticking with us here on the Obligatory PSU Podcast. Please spread the word about what we're doing. Tell your fellow friends and Penn State alumni about all the fun that it's had here on a regular basis. Give us a 5-star rating wherever you consume your podcasts. Write a review if you're off of mind. And for God's sakes, your vote matters, not just on November 3rd, but right now. Go to creamery.psu.edu and vote in the Creamery's Fantasy Flavor League. So thank you, everyone. We are almost to real football. Brandon, Mike the Mailman, Kevin Horn, we're all going to be back together next week. And until then, I hope that you take care of yourselves and each other. We are.
That was the Obligatory PSU Podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. Like and follow at Obligatory PSU.
Every time you hit like and subscribe, Mike the Mailman smiles.